Hello, and thanks for tuning in again to the Building HVAC Science Podcast. Actually, does anyone ever tune in anymore? That's the kind of old thing from transistor radios. But in this episode, with Chris Wisniewski of ICS HVAC, we'll be talking about rethinking HVAC with a high-end twist. So Eric and I got a chance to speak with Chris, who I know through a couple of things, HVAC Owners Group and some work we're doing on Facebook and some work we're doing with Duckling. He's also helping us with that project too. You've heard about that. John Hohen's interview with me and Duckling was a few months ago. But Chris talks about his journey from having really no interest in HVAC and being influenced by his dad's work to taking over the family business after college. And he talks about the importance of being in the field and understanding the technical aspects, which led to his interest in control systems and the evolution of his business from industrial to high-end and standard residential services. This is a really interesting journey. Chris discusses the business's transition towards high-end residential work in the city, or New York City, by incorporating standard residential products and projects and the challenges of adapting to different market demands. He highlights his commitment to quality, and he really does care a lot about quality. You should see some of the pictures of the work he does, some of the pictures of the work that he finds in the field and identifies as being of need of repair and better quality work. He also talks about some business coaching programs, some of his perspectives on that, and stressing quality installation and the challenge of pricing competitively without compromising standards. That's a real struggle today. And Chris gives some really great thoughts about that. And then we sort of close up by talking about recruitment challenges in HVAC, especially finding dedicated and skilled technicians. He talks about how his company integrates new technology in the business approach and provides value and maintaining high standards all at the same time. He also talks about choosing the right customers, how important that is, and the right projects that align with the ethos of the company, and emphasizes that while that may limit the rapid scaling of the business, it ensures the company remains true to its values and delivers high quality and satisfying work. And satisfying for the customer, I would say the owners and the staff, the employees. So listen to this episode. I think it's a really thoughtful conversation Eric and I have with Chris Wisniewski about Inside the Toolbox, rethinking HVAC with a high-end twist.
All right. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of the Building HVAC Science Podcast. I am one of your co-hosts, Eric Kaiser. With me today is also Bill Spohn, and we have a special guest today, Mr. Chris Wisniewski. I think I got that correct in pronunciation.
You got it right.
All right. Every once in a while, I get one right. So Chris is I'm going to say high-end residential contractor. I don't know a ton about Chris, but I've followed him in a group we belong to, and some of the things he talks about are really, really neat and things that I've never gotten to see. And I'm really interested to learn more about you and your business, Chris.
Tell me where to start. I could start from when I was a young lad to more recent stuff, but ask me a question or give me a starting point and I'll start telling you something.
I'm interested to know how you got started in the trade and where this business grew from.
My father was an HVAC. He worked many, many years prior in his last job before he started his own business was working with Trane. He was dealing with a lot of industrial/large-scale commercial stuff. When he opened his company, that's what he started with. And I happened to be his son, so I happened to be exposed to this stuff very early on, but it was never a push from him for me to do this. And there was honestly no interest for me to do this either when I was younger. I went to college to be an architect. I actually got I minored in mechanical engineering as well. Just because I knew this stuff and it's interesting, but I had no intentions of doing it up until I was graduating college and he presented me with, here you go, you can have half the business, you can be a business owner, and I need help in the business to really run it. There was a fork in the road for me and I go, let's do this. And then I did this and I'm knee deep in it and I feel like Al Bundy in a shoe store where, in a way, I don't regret the decision. There was a lot of ups and downs and learning curves and struggles of business, of course. But I'm happy where I am. I've learned a lot because I was honestly the type of guy who I didn't go into business being the son of the business owner and I go get to sit in the office. I didn't know anything about the technical aspects of it, really. So I wanted to be out there in the field. I wanted to be out there with the installation crews. I wanted to be with the service. I immediately caught onto everything. I'm a fast learner, a jack of all trades kind of guy anyway. I got really interested in controls. And at the time, we're talking about 2000 and all that, way before you have all this Wi-Fi stuff. So there's a lot of just 24-volt controls, BMS systems, things of that sort we were doing that really caught my attention and got me truly interested in the trade. And of course, things progressed and business is growing and I have to step out of the field really and have roles in the office, have roles doing other portions of the business. And then I have to find replacements for people that know what I'm doing in the field. But I still, even till today, I can't sit still in an office chair. I want to go out there in the field. I want to see pictures. I want to meet with guys. I want to see progress of job sites. I like new technology. That's what is driving me. I'm not a typical business owner of a larger type. I'm not a large company. We're a medium company, you could say, that just has the driving force of running a business by itself. I like HVAC. I like the technical aspects of it. The business progressed from doing industrial commercial work to high-end residential in the city, which I can get into what that really means. But fast forward till today, we're doing standard residential work as well. We're doing your typical suburban homes. And that's a whole market that I've never been in before in my past HVAC life. I'm learning. I've been learning and I've been adjusting because it's a different market to work in and trying to figure out how to navigate that. But when I did hire a business coach to help us run a residential division many years ago before I actually ran it, he had a blueprint. Very similar, like Nexstar and all that, success. And I went through a couple of those variations of similar type of business coaching institutes, and it turned me off because it had nothing to do with HVAC. It had to do with, listen, we could be selling cogs or we could be sewing up pillows. It doesn't matter. The system was about making money and having sales and having processes, which is great. You need all that stuff. I'm not saying that stuff's not needed, but zero focus on HVAC. So my prerogative, and you could probably tell by some of the narrative I write on these Facebook pages, is that I'm not happy with the way HVAC is done in a residential world. Now, there's exceptions. There's unicorn companies out there. There's smaller companies that run things real well, do work real well. But the large-scale companies, the progression of the market with all the PE and the VC companies buying out HVAC companies and the way they run it, the focus is going away from doing HVAC correctly. There's a lot that is being missed. And it's not the way I want to run the company. So I'm always experimenting how to do the things differently. At the same time, you have to make money. So I am definitely guilty of being one of those business owners that provided way too much value, way too much quality for my customers at not enough price. Because we have a standard. And the standard comes from, I think, a lot of commercial contractors will most likely have the same thought as I'm having here, is that when you do commercial work and you're doing plan and spec work, something is written down on the drawings by an engineer. It's thought out, details, schedules, things of that sort. And then there's scrutiny. There's the engineer that has to review it, has to approve it. You can't just install the unit with any kind of hanger. It has to be very specific hanger as per schedule. Everything has to be done correctly. So details matter a lot. So when you work like that on jobs like that, and you train your project managers, your foremen, your installers, that details matter, the way you put this together, the way that what kind of screw you use, where you use it, how you use it. You can't just turn off the switch and go, okay, these details don't matter when we do residential anymore, right? And one of the first things we notice is that when we see residential work out there, there is no standard of details. Guys are just, whatever works that day, whatever's on the truck is the majority of what you see out there. It's horribly done. And I know it's a very generalized statement, but I bet you it's the majority of installations. I mean, it is by me. It definitely is by me. It's not like I can say, oh, this company or this series of companies does it bad. It's whether sometimes they're small companies, those companies people call the chuck in a truck, or the large companies that've got the white shirts. The installations are horrible out there. They're bad. Not just sizing of equipment, not just the fact ductwork isn't even sized correctly a lot of times, but just the way they put it together, the sloppy, the tapes peeling off, the no insulation in the spots you're supposed to have insulation on, the drain barely pitches, things of that sort, that the unit just sits there on some concrete block shaking the ceiling while no isolators. That's what we see out there. And our prerogative in our company is not to do it like that. It's to do quality installs, whatever that means, all those details plus more. So that demands a higher price than your average residential company is charging. So our struggle is selling jobs like that. I'm going to be the highest guy or most close to the higher price guy in most scenarios. So it's a tougher sell. And not every residential customer is really interested in having it done right. They sometimes tell you to your face, it's like, no, I just wanted the cheapest. I don't care. Well, it's been like this for 20 years. Who cares? We've experimented with doing things differently and trying to find the customer that matches up to what we provide. And that's a struggle because there's a certain volume that we're not a very tiny company. I have 100 plus employees. We have to have a certain volume of work to be successful. So we're always tweaking to who is our customer? How many sales can we get? What is that minimum baseline for us that says like we can do jobs this cheap and negotiate on some of these details that we were anal on before? Because before it was like when I started off, I was gung-ho and doing what we do in our higher end residential jobs. It's like any system we put in, if it doesn't have it from the factory, we automatically put in low high pressure switches. We put a low ambient kit. We put a crankcase heater on a thing. We make it so the thing lasts forever and works and we have no problems because that's what our high-end residential customers expect. That doesn't quite monetarily work on your typical residential setup. We're always fine-tuning, what is that job? What is that perfect job and the perfect customer for us? And I'm still playing with that till today.
And that sounds like something that is always going to be an ongoing effort and always going to be an ongoing thing. Like you're always going to be playing with and learning what works and learning what doesn't work. Do you get into many things like indoor air quality, or do you find customers talking about things like that? And where are they going with things like that even?
We try to. I think indoor air quality around the country probably has different pockets in the country where that's a lot more important. We're selling in Northern New Jersey, New York City. It doesn't seem to be that much of a conversation. There's definitely the clients that are into it. There's definitely clients that are receptive. A lot of them don't put that much value on it. They'll put value in the low-cost items. They'll want the low-cost items. So yes, we discuss indoor air quality. We discuss the major things. Filtration, number one. And there's levels of filtration. We can get you a better filter on the unit. But if you really want super-duper filtration around your house, there's a bypass HEPA filter and things like that. And that's a harder sell. Some people go for it. Most don't, but most people will go for a better filter on the unit. You always talk about introducing outside air. And that's a hard one too, because there's, I would say, nearly 100% of the residential systems we encounter that where we change out. No one's got fresh air installed in them. No one, not around here. I can't recall the last time I've actually seen a fresh air system installed. The newer builds, maybe the newer mansions and things of that sort will have an ERV, things like that. But the average suburban consumer in my area does not have fresh air.
Do they need it?
Does it need it? Yeah, you're right, because a lot of them are older homes, a lot of infiltration anyway. But a lot of these older homes, people did upgrade and they did insulate the heck out of it. And they did do that. And they do tell us about symptoms of being stuffy and this and that. And it's never a bad idea. But in order to accomplish it, you got to be somewhere near an outside wall. You got to put ducts in. You got to put a damper in. And the cost gets up there. So that's a tough sell on retrofits around here. Humidification, it's one of those topics where I think that's another indoor air quality item where customers do buy into it. The second you mentioned static shock, do you get shocked by static every time you touch a doorknob and go, oh, I do. Do you wake up with bloody? Oh, I do. Well, let me tell you why it's happening. The only thing is that personally, I'm not a fan of bypass humidifiers. They don't really work well. The powered, like Honeywell April Air humidifier is a little bit better. That's what we install. That's the poor man's humidification. If you got a large home and you need way more humidification, I'm a fan of steam because steam, it's guaranteed. If you do it right, you can guarantee your humidity levels in there. A lot of times with the cheaper humidifiers, it's like hit or miss to what humidity level you can get in there. But that sells. The cheaper humidifiers sell around here.
Now, you mentioned steam humidifiers. You said something here a little while back. I was reading something you wrote about the volume of steam humidifiers you have out there. And it just blew my mind.
People that work in New York, I got to imagine a market like Chicago or some of these cities to probably have a very similar jobs. But if anybody's worked in New York City, they know. You get a plan from architects for a high-end residence. And a high-end residence is, just so people know, it's not the McMansion where it's like $1.2 million somewhere in the suburbs. It's an apartment in a building that's, I don't know, 10, 15, 30, 50 million or brownstone. And engineers and architects, when they specify these jobs, they'll put humidifiers on every damn floor of the place, everywhere you can. The reason is because these places, first and foremost, get finished with exotic woods. A lot of exotic woods where the floor guy will tell you, I can't install this floor unless it's 40% relative humidity in here. And I'm not warranting your floor unless it's a constant 40% relative humidity in here. That's reason number one. So millwork and floors. Reason number two, a lot of these clients have paintings too. They probably should keep them in museums, but they refuse to. They have valuable paintings and they're worried about that kind of stuff. And it's one of those things I think the architects sell them onto, that they need to have good humidity levels. So they're overdone a lot of times, but they're done on the side of caution. And I can't believe, if you take an average high-end residence place that we do, let's just say they have, call it 10 systems. If one air conditioning system goes down, they'll give you a call, be like, hey, the guest wing zone is down whenever you guys get here. If there's a low humidity level, it's like, you guys got to get here now because my floors are going to explode and things are going to start cracking and my painting. And so it's like, they value that humidity thing a lot more than anything else. It's kind of funny.
It's interesting. IAQ talked about filtration, fresh air, and humidification. And that's like the HVAC school group. That's called like the Holy Trinity of IAQ. You didn't mention anything else. Is there anything else to it?
Anything else to indoor air quality?
Yeah, to providing good indoor air quality.
Perhaps dehumidification. Again, in my area, it's not huge.
Humidity control.
Humidity control, right. Humidification, dehumidification. We have clients that are into the gadgets, into the UV lights, into some of these other stuff. We've sold it. We don't really push it. I do believe there's a place for the UV lights that shine on the coils. They work. We've had evidence that you open it up, it's nice and clean inside. It prevents stuff. The UV lights that are supposed to clean the air a little bit stronger, we don't really push that stuff. Oh, you're saying, is there anything else? I mean, it's just the ventilation, like I mentioned. I don't know. Is this a test?
I'm liking what I'm hearing.
Yeah.
It's like three basic things. You assess the customer's needs. You assess the environment they're in, and you take care of them. We talked before we got started, and it's like, I've known you online for maybe a year and a half. Known you like more intimately for the last year or so, maybe even 9 months. But it seems like you know how to stay out of trouble because of all your experience. Like you collect all this wisdom and the difficulties you get into and you learn from it and you move on and you continue to morph your business. Is that a good assumption?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I may appear like I'm 30 years old, but like I said, I've been technically deeply running the business since I was 23, as soon as I left college. My father threw me out there and he goes, whatever. And I handled everything that was thrown at me. I've made a lot of mistakes. Of course, I mean, just technical mistakes, of course, business mistakes. I still make business mistakes.
Maybe one of them is coming on this podcast.
Yeah, maybe. When you deal with these jobs that we dealt with, again, talk about high-end residential in a building, millions of dollars of floors and millwork, and your humidifier leaks all over the place and causes $500,000 worth of damage. I've been there. I've been there more than once, to the point where we learn and we go, we got to make these things foolproof because mechanical things fail. And then how did they fail? Where did they fail? What failed? Putting in a humidifier in an apartment, most of these places don't have mechanical rooms. Your air handlers are above the ceiling and the architects want to have the highest ceilings possible. You have no room to spare. There's a level of difficulty. So then you learn how to do controls and redundant controls and where to place the controls correctly. We've had a duct high limit switch fail on us. So that was one of the accidents. Everything was fine. Everything was installed fine, but that part failed. So what do? We started putting two of them in, one for redundancy. They're all in a series. Same thing with airproof switches. And then on top of it, even current sensing relays to make sure that every now and then, depending on what kind of system type we had, what happens when you have moisture in a duct and you turn on the air conditioning? A lot of condensation will happen pretty fast. So we got to prevent AC from turning on. You learn to do things like that. And also, you're probably referring to, I comment a lot about customers too. It's just, stereotypes are true.
That's how they get to become stereotypes.
That's how you become stereotypes. And to be honest, that's not a 100% factual statement, of course. But you do enough things with enough people and you pick up on patterns and you know that you want to stay away from these kind of customers for whatever reason that is, whether they're difficult customers or you're always resulting in some kind of bottom line sale from these customers. Everything I described to you guys just now, we're not the kind of company that just wants to install furnaces and swap them one for one. That's fine. There's plenty of companies that just want to do the repeat, box after box, swap out. It's not fun for us. And the kind of people I hired are like-minded. They're like-minded like me. They like exciting projects. They like to tinker around with the latest technology. They like to see something different happen. Every business or sales guy tells you, how do you differentiate yourself? You don't tell customers you're better. You tell them you're different. So we try to be the people that do things differently. And I know this may be hard to grasp, even in 2023, when you have the IRA 25C tax credit and when there's so much conversation about heat pumps. But every time we come to a job where a heating and cooling system gets to be changed, and when the situation is correct for a heat pump, because sometimes it isn't. Sometimes you have a 100,000 BTU furnace. It's more or less sized correctly because the place needs 80,000 BTUs of heating. You're not going to talk about heat pump. It may be hybrid. But the feedback we get from clients be like, Chris, I got 7 proposals, which is the norm now. You guys are the only ones who mentioned I could do this with a heat pump. Tell me more about it. And then they'll circle back, be like, you know, I asked the other contractors. They said it's not going to work or whatever it is. And that's one thing that makes us different. And we land those jobs where we convert people out of those gas furnaces. And not every client is interested in that. Not every client wants to delve into the numbers. But we seem to attract the kind of clients who like looking at charts and performance curves. Right before I got on here, I had a Zoom call with a client. He's taking notes and he's very geeky. And this is like his third week sitting on a proposal. That's normal for us. He's probably going to pull the trigger. He just wanted to see a comparison of the costs if we go with this Daikin version versus this Mitsubishi version. And we ran through numbers. And I like that because I come from the world where my interactions before were with engineers, mechanical engineers, and we could talk to each other. And there's lots of customers like that. It's a small percentage, but that's the customers we want.
You live in a big enough or an area that has enough population to support your philosophy, which may be called, you're bringing a commercial business philosophy to residential contracting.
Correct. Yeah. Our motto that we developed for the residential world is reducing costs, increasing comfort. Because that's exactly what we do. 90% of our scenarios, even if you're not talking about switching to heat pump, we end up downsizing equipment because we have that load calculation conversation. And lots of equipment is oversized. So you're reducing costs right there. You're also reducing costs because the majority of equipment, I mean, I always do the good, better, best thing anyway, because you can go with a baseline single stage piece of equipment. Here's a variable speed piece of equipment. And people are attracted to that. And again, you're reducing operating costs by going with a variable speed of equipment. At the same time, you're increasing comfort. You downsize the, call it the AC, and you have a variable speed AC. You guys are knowledgeable. You know what that does for a house. And like 90% of our sales become that, even though we always offer single stage stuff. And yeah, there's people that definitely go, hey, I just want single stage. You guys seem like you're good. Give me the cheapest stuff. But we have, I think, a good narrative at the sales process to explain to people the benefits of sizing equipment correctly and going with the variable speed stuff and being pragmatic about it. Because there's mid-grade variable speed stuff and there is the crazy 22, 23 SEER, which is so outrageously priced, I don't know who the hell buys it and what the heck for.
We talked about the sales end and how you take care of customers. How about how you run the business, especially with what everybody seems to be suffering from is the shortage of good technicians. How do you manage that aspect in your business?
Yeah, that's the Achilles heel right now, I think, for the industry, definitely for us as well. It's a struggle. And it's not even a struggle for, initially, going back even a couple of years, it's a struggle finding experienced people. Fine. Now it's a struggle finding people to just want to show up and put the tools back and forth or whatever it is, just starting somewhere, show up each day and give an effort. There's a cultural problem here that I don't think I'm going to solve. I just have to adapt to it. It's difficult. My statistic right now, if you want to hear it, because we just went over this with my team, is 108 resumes reviewed, 88 people we reach out to that make the cut on the resume side to be like, hey, you're interested in phone screen. We get about 25 phone screens, 3 interviews, 1 shows up, 1 gets a job offer. The amount of effort it takes, it's every time we say we need to hire people, everyone's like, oh my God, this is just, it's so tight.
I think panning for gold is better than what you're doing.
It really is. And then, of course, a lot of new hires just don't work out, the culture, the whatever, everything. So how are we dealing with it internally? The guys that are weak, we are focusing on them. We're trying to make something out of them. We're giving them all the help they can get. Anyone that's on my team has got a good work ethic already, because that's first and foremost. You can't be here and not have that ambition to at least show up every day and try to do your best. So the shortcomings are really, some guys just aren't as fast as other guys. Some guys don't pick up on stuff as well as other guys. Some guys just have a ceiling somewhere. You just have to be manager heavy on them. And I don't mean micromanaging. I just mean that there's a lot of supervision. So we use a lot of technology. For instance, when a sales guy sells a job, it's like everything is told to the installers. Here's what you're doing. Here's a duct over here. This is the duct we're tapping at in a video and photo format. You're running an 8-inch duct here to bring 200 CFM to this. You're running a new pipe here, there, there. So there's no mistakes about what, where, and how, which is a good idea anyway, even if you have a competent crew. And then our guys have daily reports where they have to, we use Vision XOI, similar to company camp kind of thing. So the guys at the end of the day, they have to submit that report, which is basically video and pictures of the job they did, everything. And they're trained after many, many, many times of making the mistakes of what you're supposed to take the pictures of and what's important, what's not important. And the managers at the end of the day have to review it. And luckily, a lot of the jobs we do are not one-day jobs or 2 or 3 day jobs. So if you pick up on something, you go, listen, this is not done wrong. This is, you got to redo this pipe, or why'd you do this? So by the time the second day comes, they can correct their action. Because it's when you don't have that experience as a seasoned installer, I'm not even talking about technicians. Technician is a different thing, but as a seasoned installer, yeah, you'll make silly little mistakes, technical things, not because you're trying to do a bad job. It's just that not everything's in the instruction manual. Or sometimes it's buried deep, and sometimes it's a trick of the trade. And then how easy is it to show somebody a trick of a trade? Because I was shown many tricks of the trade. You stumble onto something, be like, why does this happen? Well, these units, none of them come with a good ground screw. You got to change out the ground screw, and then everything works perfectly. Like, you would have never figured that out. So it's manager heavy. They're on top of the guys, and the guys learn faster that way, because there's honestly no or not enough seasoned guys in the field with them holding their hands, which is the way most of these guys learn. And we try to flip guys around, like, hey, listen, you spent some time here with this guy who wasn't that strong. Now you're going to be with this guy who is strong. So we constantly move guys around so they get the experience of different guys and they get to pick up on things. But it's one of those things that didn't exist for us 10 years ago. 10 years ago, you had a bunch of competent guys, and then, yeah, you give them different apprentices. They're the ones who can assess apprentices and teach apprentices and things like that. And you have full confidence in what they're doing. And now it is the most difficult part of the business right now, not just on me as a business owner, on my managers. I have conversations with my managers a lot about this, and it's very taxing on them. And I tell them, listen, there's no other way. It's, if we don't do this, it's a show out there, right?
So you said you love technology. This is kind of a two-part question. How do you keep up with new technology in the trade? Where do you go to find out about new technologies that you're interested in bringing into your business? And where do you find time to integrate them in?
Oh, wow. Back in the day, it was kind of easy for us, because going back to the high-end residential conversation, millionaires and billionaires that have their homes built have the latest and greatest. So we saw stuff on the plans from engineers that were in the industry, and they specified something. And my company was the first company who bought a VRF system in the Northeast area. We were told that. 2003, I forget now the exact year, but Daikin, it was specified on the drawings. This engineer, I saw the drawings. It was a brownstone. And I called up the engineer and I go, you forgot the boiler. Where's the boiler? He goes, no, this is the heat pumps heat the whole building. I'm like, I don't see any electric coils. He's like, no, the heat pump will. At first, I was just like any other guy. This is stupid. This is not going to work. Then you witness it. You do it all over again. And then you have these control systems and other things that are always like specified, and you learn about them and you go to trade shows and things like that. But today it's easy. It's the internet. Like, you go on the internet. I receive like hundreds of emails every day about some fantastic products. Now, I don't jump on the latest and greatest. There's got to be sort of a proven, there's got to be a couple of things. Is it sellable? Does anybody need it? Does it help us? Does it help the client? That's number one. Number two, I'm always skeptical of something coming out of China. I've been a victim of jumping on products and all of a sudden it's like no longer exists. And I have these customers out there that have no support for product ABC, whatever that was. So it would take a litmus test to bring it to selling to customers. It's got to be kind of a proven product. But I'm not afraid of it. I don't know if you guys know, so Fujitsu came out with this unit. It's pretty new. It's a replacement for a PTAC, where the PTAC that slides in, I don't know if you know about this, is a heat pump, and it connects to a ductless head. Maybe in your areas, you don't have this, but you know how many people hate PTAC units? They're loud. They're annoying. They're just the worst. PTAC units are the worst. In a city environment, so many people have PTACs. So we installed one. And I told the guy, like, you're going to be the guinea pig. And he loves it so far. Because, yeah, it was the first one for us, but we're not afraid to do it. I bet you a lot of contractors just be like, I don't know what this is, but we'll stand behind it. We'll stand behind the product. I told them, like, listen, it just came out a couple months ago. You are the first customer. If there's something wrong, like, you call us back. We'll figure it out. We'll fix it. But it may be a good start to a lot of PTAC problems that I have so many customers with PTACs. So many customers that hate PTACs. And this thing's the answer. I mean, it purrs like a kitten. It's a Fujitsu. It's a high efficiency heat pump. It makes the rebates. So, yeah, it's a wonderful thing.
That's awesome. And it can just drop in a standard PTAC or PTHP wall sleeve then. And
not as easy as you think. So you have to take the wall sleeve out. You have to redo the wall sleeve.
That's not quite as easy as I was hoping then.
Yeah, I was hoping they make a slide in, slide out, but it's the bottom of that wall sleeve's got a defrost heater in there and things like that. So it's a little bit more complicated.
Oh, gotcha. For the new one.
Have you seen any of those systems that go through the window, that overhang the window?
Yeah, the window unit heat pumps. I read an article, I think New York State, New York City, they have this mandate about all these buildings going electrifying, whatever date that is, they have a cutoff. So they have a big problem that a lot of these public housing buildings, they don't have the infrastructure for anything. And to retrofit these buildings with heat pump systems is so much money that they just don't have it. So that's a quick, easy answer, because apparently those things are efficient. I mean, all these buildings have window units anyway. You hang that out. And I haven't bought one, but I did look at the specs. They're supposed to be nice and quiet and work as heat. And I bet you they're cheap enough where if it breaks, you throw it out and put another one in.
But don't throw out the window.
Well, no, don't throw out the window, right? There's a market for that, but obviously your typical person doesn't want stuff in their window.
No.
That's really interesting about that PTAC unit. Now you got me thinking all kinds of neat stuff about that and how many hotels could be fixed and I could sleep at night when we travel.
Hotel's not going to do it anytime soon, trust me.
I know. It was a nice dream, though.
One of the things I picked up on one of your posts, and hope you don't mind, the HVAC owners group.
I don't mind. I post the most. Yes, yes.
You post the most. Yeah, you got to be like lead poster there. You're talking about seeking a budget first and not avoiding the price conversation until the end, but bringing it up to make sure that you're spending good time with the customer. Can you elaborate on that?
Yeah. So again, this has to, so B2B sales, whole different strategy. And budget is always part of the conversation initially. And when you go B2C, and right before we decided to do a division of our company to do regular residential work, I did a lot of investing in trying to figure out what the residential market is. And we did a lot of sales training. And we still do sales training. There's good sales trainers out there, but pretty much all of them will have this whole sales process where the price is almost never discussed. It's like a sin. When you talk about the residential, don't mention the price, don't mention it. And the prices, show the value, prices at the end. That's nice. That's great. It does sometimes work, at least in my market, at least with my customers. I felt like that was broken. I'm the type of guy who, I've never done residential sales before in my past life doing high-end residential. I did different kind of sales, but never suburban residential market sales. So when we did residential, started doing residential work and I hired my sales guys, I started getting feedback, but here I am, I don't really understand residential sales. I have a different vision of it. So I decided that I got to go out there and do sales on my own. So I took sales training on my own and I decided to go do residential sales. And I actually love it. So that's the thing. In the beginning, it was like, this is a pain in the ass. What am I doing here in this 1,300 square foot house and talking to this? But I had to come down from my previous mindset. And I learned a lot. And one of the things I learned, a lot of the feedback would be like, Chris, you took me through this whole process. If I knew this was $15,000, I would have told you, like, there's no way I'm doing this. So we should have talked about, and I got that feedback often enough where, like, people just being honest. We should be more honest. So initially, it was one of those things like, listen, we could do A, in the price range of this, B in the price range of this, C in the price range of this, and let me explain to you the different benefits and things like that. And then it progressed really to the initial phone conversation because we were getting so many bad, and here's another one that salespeople want, real sales trainers. There's no such thing as a bad lead. Stop it. Stop it. There's just horrible people, even to the point of not even that they won't buy from you. You go to a house and you go, it's a disaster. I don't want my guys working in this house. I had a sales guy that goes, Chris, I'm here. There's dog feces all over the place. This place looks like it's never been cleaned. The people here are nasty as hell. I'm like, walk out of there. If you don't feel comfortable, our guy's going to have to spend a whole day in there. Let's walk out of there. So we don't want every person, but prospects lie. They lie a lot because they're trying to play you. They think they're playing a game of this, like, oh, no, we're just looking. You go to the car dealership. Well, we're just looking. No, you're here to buy a car. Don't tell me you're just looking. But there was people they were used to, like their local plumber who changed their AC before and he charged them $4,000. So they're calling somebody now and they think it's going to be $6,000. And you show up to the house and there's this huge disconnect, huge price gap that just these people are not, they can't afford it. They can't get credit. So you shifted that to be the first line of sort of communication. And it's as simple as saying, listen, okay, so you hear them out, you hear what they're looking for. You go, listen, the majority of our projects for something like that start about $10,000 and go up from there. Are you comfortable with that? And you go, oh, yeah, I expected that. No problem. All right, great, fantastic. And then you still, today, I'll bet you I listen to the phone logs. People be like, oh, you guys are crazy. You're overcharging. Click. So there you go. I didn't waste a trip out there. Fantastic. So I want that to happen up front.
That's a very different approach, like you said, about from what typical sales training teaches. But I like it, and it seems to work well for you.
Yeah, we're selective. So listen, my philosophy here is not for scaling for a $200 million company. I know that, but that's not the intention. That's not the prerogative. The prerogative is to do HVAC right, to be profitable, to scale as much as we can scale. But if somebody takes my advice and they're trying to be the next whatever company to $500 million, no, those companies got to churn and burn and just sell, no matter what is in front of them. That's what my opening statement to you guys was. It's not what we're interested in. That's not what I'm interested in. That's not what my people that I hired are even interested in. So why waste my time?
You really know what your objectives are in the business and you stick by them. You make sure people they're well communicated and you follow through with your actions. It's a very simple recipe when you come right down to it, but it's a hard one to execute because you can get lured away by that every lead's an important lead, or just because the customer is trying to attract you doesn't mean you want to be attracted to them.
Absolutely. And that's where you dive back into your marketing and start tailoring your marketing to make sure you're not attracting those people. You've probably seen my philosophy on the tune-ups. This company's out to be like, oh, tune-ups are fantastic for us. The $2 tune-up. When we initially did, we followed business coach advice and we started doing that. We started attracting the kind of people who would just never, ever hire us for anything. And if we presented them with a proposal for repair, they would go out there and get six prices for other repair work. And it took a while for me to realize it's really the marketing. We're advertising something really cheap. So who looks at something really cheap? Bill, if I told you that there's a doctor, whatever, Dr. Kaiser, is performing free brain surgery and you need brain surgery, would you go, oh, this is great. It's a great opportunity.
Somebody's going to be in trouble here.
I mean, that's an extreme, but there is a group of people that read through that, be like, they understand that it doesn't cost $39 for a guy. They're paying for a salesperson to come into their house. So yeah, so simply raising your prices filters out a lot of people you may not want. And most contractors are afraid to do that because they're afraid of losing a certain percentage of their customers. And they will. And sometimes it's a struggle. You have to do it at the right time. You have to do it when you're busy. I've shed so many customers and I've learned to do it and it's for the better. And if you look, people ask you like, what are the things you regret in your history of business? So number one is definitely keeping people around too long in a business that shouldn't have been employed. And number two, keeping customers around for too long. On a straightforward residential side, that may not affect most businesses because it's mostly like one and done with a lot of customers. They repeat once a year, maybe for some service. But on the commercial side, you're doing project after project after project with these people, and they're just driving your employees insane. They're just mean and nasty, but they pay. And you hang on to them, you hang on to them. At some point, you go, these are not good business partners for us. And if I went back in history, I'd be like, I would cut that person off in 2002, not 2010.
Really interesting story, Chris. I really appreciate you coming on and chatting with us and sharing your experience. You make it seem so matter of fact. This is what you do. And I think you're a product of your experience, but you pay attention to the world, you pay attention to technology, pay attention to customers. It's like I said before, I asked you to come on the show because I thought you're an interesting guy.
Yeah, I appreciate that.
Any closing thoughts for our listeners?
It seems like we talked about obviously running the business a lot. And I have business owners reach out to me, the guys that are starting out as smaller companies, and they're always trying to figure out what to do. There's an easy path. You can definitely follow a blueprint that's out there. developer, you're going to be a product of that blueprint. You're going to be just another generic company. You can be successful. You can make money. But if you have a desire to do things differently, just do them differently. Take that blueprint, adapt it, change it. Don't be afraid to try things. Don't be afraid to make the mistakes. Now, granted, you shouldn't be making mistakes to put you out of business, but don't be afraid to play on all these things that the business coaches tell you, because business coach is just another guy. And the majority of those guys ran a business for a little bit. They sold it. They feel fantastic about themselves. And I don't mean any bad things towards any particular person. There's some better than others, but a lot of them are that. And a lot of them, the longer ago they sold the business, the more disconnected they really are to what's happening today. So take what they've learned and figure out how to make it better on your own.
It's probably more important, at least to blend in some existing operators with some past operators, because the existing ones like yourself are doing it every day, facing the challenges, like you talked about, the cultural and ethics change in employees and the 1 in 100 that you have to go after. Thanks again. And I guess I'll see you online, and we'll be working together more with Duckling.
Yep.
So I really appreciate your input and insights into that.
Yeah, wonderful. Thank you, guys. Thank you, Bill. Thank you, Eric.
Okay.
Thank you, Chris. Appreciate you coming on. It's been a lot of fun.
Sure.
Thanks again for listening to the Building HVAC Science podcast, where it's our goal to help create better, more knowledgeable HVAC and building performance technicians by helping these two professions better understand each other, with the ultimate goal of making customers happy in the homes they live in and the buildings they work in. And you can see Chris Wisniewski embodies those principles. He really understands HVAC, building performance, and has to put it to work in his marketplace. Doing a great job out there. I also host the Res Talk podcast, where you can learn more about home energy ratings and peripheral topics. That's RESTALK, Res Talk podcast. It's a production of ResNet, RESNET.us. If you're interested in feeding back about the podcast, please contact us at marketing@truetechtools.com. Some of the topics we discuss require technical training for proper interpretation and execution, safe execution. So if you're a trained pro, you can go right ahead. But if you're not, please consult with and hire a trained pro. The Building HVAC Science podcast is a production of True Tech Tools Limited. Full disclosure, I'm a co-owner of True Tech. And the opinions voiced are those of my guests, my co-host, or myself, depending on who is moving their lips, of course. And if you're in the market for any tools or test instruments mentioned in the podcast or just in general, take a look at what True Tech Tools carries, TRUTECHTOOLS.com, and use the offer code HVACBS for a nice discount. I want to thank you for listening into this podcast and look forward to bringing you more informational topics in the world of HVAC and building science coming up right up in the future. Take care.